back to another episode of the Tetracast. This is RPG Site's weekly podcast where we get the site staff together to talk about our favorite genre of video games. My name is Brian Vitale. Joining me, we have Josh Torres.
Lord of the Calm Before the Storm.
Chow Min Wu.
How's it going?
And returning from his escapades in Japan over at TGS, we have James Glazio.
I am mostly no longer jet lagged.
Hang in there, James. But yeah, James, of course, is back from TGS. We covered a lot of that news last week. We were basically recording that during the last day of TGS. We had talked a little bit about what James had put up on the site at the time, but of course he was boots on the ground over in Japan. So now we have him back, and of course we're going to focus a lot on his experience over at TGS, covering what he's put up on the site, what he saw, his experience there. It's kind of like Josh alluded to, kind of a calm before the storm. We are recording this within the first week of October. Of course, we've had October circled on our calendars for a while for all sorts of upcoming releases. We've got several live demos, Romancing Saga 2, Metaphor for games that are releasing later in the month. We've got the localization of East coming out. We've got a Diablo expansion. We've got a lot coming out. Card and Ciel. And then, yeah, but a lot of that is starting next week, of course. Metaphor is the big one that we've got circled on our calendar for next week. Adam is still out with a personal vacation. We'll hopefully see him back next week. I know he's been having a few, working on a few things behind the scenes. So this week is kind of just like the calm before the storm, as Josh pointed out. And of course, we're going to talk a lot about games that are coming up into next year that James saw at TGS that we were able to speak to last week, but have the firsthand account this week with James back on the podcast. So yeah, it's an exciting time of the year. Only 2 months left in terms of like our coverage window, just as a reminder. And it's an arbitrary delineation, but for RPG Site, we kind of call the year December through November in terms of our coverage, just because that with the winter holiday, that just kind of helps things lay out a little bit easier. So I don't know, it feels like just a month ago we were back in June, but actually that was 4 months ago and it's already October. But without any further preamble, I'm basically just going to hand the microphone, so to speak, off over to James. I guess, when did you get back, James? How long have you been back home?
I got back on Wednesday. So.
Gotcha. And we're recording this on Saturday, so it's been less than a week, which makes sense.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm mostly no longer jet lagged, so.
And was, I'm trying to remember, this wasn't your first time in Japan, but was it your first time covering TGS, or did you go last year?
No, I went last year.
Okay, yeah. I don't remember. All the years are blending together. But yeah, so your second time at TGS, just tell us, you know, walk through like where you went, what you saw, both in terms of your coverage for the site. And I don't know if you also visited anything else just while you were there, just visiting.
Yeah, so the situation this time is after last year, which was a solo TGS journey, I was completely on my own. Well, technically, after TGS, I stayed a couple of days more. And this was before Junior joined the site, but basically he lives in Kyoto, so I actually spent like a couple of days with his family to, because he wanted to show me around. And so last year I checked out Kyoto. I had a day trip to Osaka and obviously Tokyo because of TGS. This year, after my successful Japan trip last year, I don't know what it is about older people in the US or just in general, but there is a mistaken impression that everything is way more expensive in Japan. So when I told my parents, who like to travel, that actually the only really expensive thing is the plane ticket, my dad was like, let me go with you next time. So I was with my dad in Japan this time around.
Oh, I had no idea. That's pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the impression is probably from 10 years ago when their currency is worth a lot. But since their currency tanked, the lot thing is dirt cheap. But their food's always been inexpensive, in my opinion. It's way more expensive eating here for the quality you get over down there. So.
Yep. But anyways, so also the timing for TGS was a little bit different this year. It was like half a week later versus last year's, which was like, I think it was like the 21st, 22nd. And then the public days were 23rd, 24th or something like that. This year, the business days were the 25th and 26th, or was it 26th, 27th? Either way. Because my dad was with me, I also went to Kyoto again. Didn't see Junior, though I did drop off his Steam Deck that last year he purchased the Steam Deck off of someone, and he was expecting it to get to him when he was visiting his dad in the States. And it just didn't get in time. So he's been like, well, shit, we can't really, it would cost so much to ship it because of the big battery. And it's just been sitting there. So I was like, you know, I'm going to be in Japan again. So you hand-carried it. Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty fun. Useful.
But yeah, checked out Kyoto again with my dad. I didn't personally see too much new, but he had a good time. And obviously, he had a good time with Tokyo. And the last, like, day or two, we actually went to Hokkaido and saw Sapporo a bit. And that was a great time.
That's pretty awesome.
Hokkaido is awesome. If you guys, like, anyone listening that's ever been to Japan or maybe hasn't been and... check out Hokkaido. It's really fascinating how different the vibes are up there versus like Tokyo and Kyoto.
That's actually where I spent most of my Japanese trip last time. It was like 2 weeks in Hokkaido and just about 4 days in Tokyo.
So you get what I mean. It's like everyone there is so much more laid back in the food. Oh man, the food.
Yeah, the food is way better than Tokyo. There is this rice ball by the red light district that is god tier. And then I go to the Tokyo one, I'm like, this doesn't taste quite the same.
Like, it's also really funny how because Hokkaido has way more dairy and beef and lamb and like potatoes and whatnot, that when you have like Hokkaido curry, it's like, oh, it makes it immediately more obvious. It's like, this is basically just the thick pot roast. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's really fascinating how, like, because of the hardier, food in Hokkaido, some of the, Japanese dishes that, like, have, like, their roots in, like, Western, like, cuisine kind of show their roots a bit more, if that makes sense.
What are some of like the spots like in Hokkaido when people are visiting Hokkaido for the first time? Like are there any specific spots that you recommend people to check out there?
Unfortunately, since I was only there for like a day and a half, I wasn't able to see too much. I did see some rural stuff in the southwest part of Hokkaido. Mm-hmm. The main thing people are going to want to check out, obviously, is Sapporo. The other reason to go to Hokkaido is just the fact that there is a lot of nature. It's a very different climate from the rest of Japan. It's still very humid, but because it's in much further north, let me put it this way. The last day I was in Japan, Tokyo, it was like 90 degrees Fahrenheit. The day before, when I was in Hokkaido, it was like 69 degrees.
Okay. All right.
So it was like way more comfortable, way more comfortable. But yeah, there was a food spot that actually a buddy of mine who is also freelance games crit, Charlie O'Toole's, recommended it because he's been in Japan. He was in Japan for a couple weeks because he also does food crit and he planned to do TGS. He has been covering it. And so he checked out a bunch of different spots and there was one in Sapporo where he's like, hey, there's this like hole in the wall, like out of like, you're not going to know about it unless someone tells you about it. But it's this farm to table restaurant that has like some of the freshest seafood you've ever had. My dad, who before we sat down was like, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about this. I've had oysters. I don't like the slimy texture. He had the oysters and it's like, oh shit, I'm never going to be able to have oysters again. These are so much better.
I've had bad oysters and now I've had good oysters and now I can never have oysters again unless they're good oysters.
Yeah.
No, that's really cool. You got to experience that with your dad.
All right, so on the Tokyo Game Show floor with you, just go to town. Like, what did you see this year?
It was an interesting year this year because, like, last year feels like it was the TGS to have gone to just because of what was on the show floor and like the sheer variety. But this year was also pretty good. A lot of the same games, like Konami's booth was basically the same. It still had a focus on Metal Gear Solid Delta, which I didn't play. I didn't go around to play, and I just went to the opposite end of it to the Valcom booth and whatnot, because I did have like a specific question for my contact because of like Trails in the Sky the First, as we've established. It's like, what the hell's going on with that? We know it's staying in date with the West, but as of right now, it doesn't have a Western publisher. So it's like, who would we want to contact for review codes when that comes out? So I just I figured I'm there. I know he's there. It's probably best just to ask in person. That's what I did. Which is also when I found out that they just straight up said, yeah, we're still in active discussions with a bunch of different companies, including Nisa and Exceed, about who wants to be the distributor. It's like, okay, that's interesting. I guess we'll find out eventually.
Yeah, and it's a surprise to everyone when they finally solidify their plans.
Everything about that has been so kind of strange, not unwelcome though, about like it's kind of unceremonious appearance at the Nintendo Direct. You know, the basically the impression of a worldwide release, but with no publishing partner identified, with screenshots in English. It's just like, wait, that's kind of out of order and a bit strange, but I don't dislike it. It's just
yeah,
just
it seems, yeah, it seems like if nothing else, they're going to be reusing the same script, which we've talked about before. So that's yeah. good, whatever. What I actually played, I'm looking at a list of it. I know you guys talked about like my Monster Hunter preview and some of the other ones last week, but I guess I'll just kind of briefly say Like a Dragon, Pirate Yakuza in Hawaii. A lot of fun. It's very fascinating how essentially the TGS demo for this was very, very similar to the TGS demo for Infinite Wealth, where it was here you are in Hawaii, do a bunch of random shit, and then there will be like one story thing at the very end, and then that's it. So it's basically a very similar demo, obviously.
I remember.
The combat's completely different. This is the best action style combat that Yox has ever had.
It seems like I get a lot of Lost Judgment vibes from like when I first saw the gameplay, which is good. I really like Lost Judgment's combat system, but this one seems really versatile because now you can like do like air combos in combat, which is weird.
Yep. Air combos. You also have the boomerang, like cutlasses and whatnot, mm-hmm. and charging up a flintlock with pure malice. All sorts of things. Okay. It's a lot of fun. Ooh. Not much else to say. I went directly to the karaoke bar and did 24 hours in a row, and it's like, yep, we're back.
Yep.
But yeah, Monster Hunter, I'm sure you talked about it. My main takeaway was, yeah, this is a follow-up to World, and also, yeah, this performance is not great.
Ahead and talk about it, because we kind of focused on, they revealed the flagship monster, they talked about a little bit about some of the other key monsters in the different biomes, but you have the more hands-on impression.
Yeah, I'm really interested to like hear about the performance, and also like they released like some of the PC specs and like a lot of frame gen, like they're counting frame gen into account with
okay, so let me put it this way. Apparently there has been some footage that's come out since this showed the PS5 version running closer to 60 FPS in like the forest. Uh-huh. I don't specifically know if it's just a difference of depending on the biome, maybe performance is better or worse. In the main biome, which I believe is the Windswept Plains, is what it's called. I think that's what it is.
Is that the desert one that they keep showing up?
Yeah. I think that's it. That might be an earlier game's biome and I'm mixing up. But if so, my apologies. It's the main one that they revealed the game with.
Okay.
Performance is all over the place. And it's like wild fluctuations to the point where I really notice the frame pace. And to be fair, I'm sensitive to this stuff, so I notice almost immediately, but it stood out to me with how kind of jerky it kind of felt, especially in the multiplayer setting, which that might be part of it. I believe the footage we saw from the forest area was single player. Mm-hmm. Windward Plains. Okay, thanks, Brian. Discarding performance for a bit, because to be fair, when Monster Hunter World came out on base PS4, it also had jerky performance, so it's not like it's new per se. The way multiplayer works in this is a lot different. It's basically you're always on an expedition, pretty much.
Okay.
Where to start a hunting quest, you deal enough damage to a monster, and that marks the monster as a hunt, and then that starts the timer. And apparently there are some quests where you can still like go to like the quest board and whatnot, and like specifically set it so you can prepare for it ahead of time. But like, it seems the normal way of handling quests this time is just going into the open world and just going up to a monster and fucking it up.
And so to tee it up for those that are interested but maybe haven't played Monster Hunter, or they're anticipating this being their first, I don't have as much experience as James does, but at least in the last two games, you would go to a quest board and you say, I'm picking this hunt where I'm going to hunt this Rathalos in this location, and then you're taken there with that objective. And then you have the option to do an expedition where you just say, I'm just going to go to this location, and whatever monsters are there, I can choose to fight independent of a quest. Where it sounds like Wilds, it sounds like that's more of the status quo. Like you would pick a location.
You can still, you can still choose like specific monsters to, I guess, focus in on one. But it seems like the main course is more free form this time. If that,
I wonder. I don't know if the Twitter or the social media branch, or like they showed that there's still like the typical town hub that people can gather in, and like still have the traditional format or style in Wilds, some way, shape, or form. If people prefer it that way, because as far as I understand from like what's been shown on the Twitter, it's like it has that free form exploration, but it also there is still some sort of form of town and hub still in the game.
Well, here's the thing: the town is in the zone. It's okay. A seamless transition from you just walk out of the town and you're in the zone, no loading screen.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. So yeah, because I think it's like it's hard to like get a sense of like okay, like I think people just actually want to know okay, is there anything I have to do different in Wilds that I did in World or Rise or any other previous Monster Hunter games? Because I think a lot of the messaging of like how multiplayer exactly functions, like I think people just want to know, is it like any different than what I did in past games?
Yeah, maybe this is in the weeds, but like in the last two games in town, you could see dozens of other players, but then when you go to the field, you're capped at your party of four. Where if it's seamless, is it always capped at four, or how does that work? Or is that not quite known yet?
So I'm assuming that if you're like for actual like going into the, I'm assuming there's like a separate hub, like a separate multiplayer hub where you can have up to 16 people because they've confirmed that's a thing you can do.
Yeah,
gotcha. But when you're doing actual multiplayer hunts, you can only have up to four people. You can only have up to four people. So I'm assuming.
Okay, so it's kind of a modification of the other system, but leaning more towards that kind of more freeform open world.
Yeah.
Design philosophy.
Okay.
What did you hunt? Or do, like when you went hands on? I forget if you specified it in your preview. Like what? How many hunts did you do? And did you play it in multiplayer or in single player?
Multiplayer. So one of the things I want to mention is that after I finished up my hunt against I forget the specific name of the monster, the not quite bear looking thing, but it's in one of the screenshots. It's like that kind of like pack of.
A Doshiguma thing.
I think that. So it's like I hunted one of those, and then after that, people just kind of went off on their own devices, and it was interesting because, like, obviously you could do this in expeditions in Monster Hunter World, but because the zones are so much bigger in this one, just running across another player, it's like, oh yeah, I forgot I was technically in multiplayer still. Even though I'm like standing right next to them, it's like, oh, right.
And it helps that like it won't be such a huge journey to get to reconvene with another because everyone has their own mounts to kind of travel towards each other.
I'm not sure if you well. The one thing I kind of want to talk about is it's fascinating how focus mode is just straight up retooling the tenderize system from Iceborne.
I think we've made that comparison before, back when they first described it.
Yeah.
It even has the same like kind of icons pop up where you have like the triangles like encircling the damage number when you're attacking the scars with a focus mode attack. So it's like immediately obvious that's meant to be the comparison. The difference is that instead of the monster awkwardly getting into a weird pose to be like, clutch claw me and knock me into the wall, it's just like, look at the monster. If you see scars, that's your cue to do a focus mode attack on them to like kind of burst the scars to deal a bunch of damage and topple them over. And it's seamless. You don't have to do anything like that really takes you out of the hunt. It's just hold down the left trigger, then do or whatever trigger. I think it's the left. Yeah, it's the left trigger and then just do your focus mode attack. So it's a lot less of a pain in the ass. It's a lot more seamless. And I don't think it really impacts the pacing of a hunt any more than like mounting does. So if anything, it impacts it less. So
yeah, I think like we'll see how the full game handles that, because you know a lot of my issues with tenderizing, a lot of people's issues with tenderizing is more so the like the artificial inflation of HP, like say
it
like
shouldn't even, be, it shouldn't yeah. be that much. It should yeah, hopefully like the amount of HP, the amount of extra damage you get from the topple doesn't seem to be as much as like the wall banging mm-hmm. or like the passive that you get from tenderizing. So I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think yeah. that they took the criticisms into account when they designed the system. Thank God.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to share with Wilds or?
You mentioned the PC requirements.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say it. I'm upgrading my CPU before this comes out because after Dragon's Dogma 2, I'm taking no chances.
Like, yeah.
The Zen 5 3D chips will be out by then. And it's like, yep, going to get one of those. And it's going to be like, if it doesn't run right on that, they coded it wrong.
Just yeah, we'll see. I mean, hopefully the PC port is all, it turns out to be all right. I think that's going to be, I think that's like probably the largest worry for a lot of people at the moment is like, you just hope the performance is like acceptable at launch.
Is this the first whether, one on, is this the first Monster Hunter on RE Engine? Or was Rise
was
Rise okay yeah
Rise was yeah. yeah
so but it was world, like there's like a lot more spec because the
framework and then Rise was RE Engine but of course targeting Switch initially okay
yeah
Rise can run on a potato like if you have a PC that you are listening to this podcast with you can play Monster Hunter Rise on it
yeah
I so, listen to this podcast on my iPhone 4
that's right so yeah. So that I think that's kind of just like the final barrier, and then we already said that this is releasing at the end of February. So, February 28th is the big date on every Monster Hunter player's mind at the moment.
Well, we talked last week about how everything is releasing in February, which seems yeah. to happen every year.
Yeah, we just mentioned about like you know the new Like a Dragon game same date as well, pretty yep, much. So.
Exactly, those two games.
Mm-hmm. All right, what else do you want to share with us, James?
So let me talk about some other games then, because yeah. Monster Hunter, I only played one hunt with Monster Hunter. That's not even barely scratching the surface and whatnot.
Right.
It was a news post I put up last week was that the Utada no Mono trilogy is coming to Nintendo Switch in Japan. The same day they announced that, they had the entire trilogy playable at TGS. It's very funny because obviously one of the other things I put up was an interview with Phantom Brave the Lost Heroes scenario writer. So obviously there was something that NIS, not NISA, but NIS both sides was doing. There was like a global like kind of press briefing for like the release date for Phantom Brave the Lost Hero and also like some other details about the game and checked out there. I mentioned, it's like, hey, I wonder if you guys are going to do, like, the Switch version of Utada no Mono. And it's like, that was the same day they announced it. And it's like, wait, that's a thing? It's like, yeah, they announced it. And it's playable at the show. So at least when I asked them, NISA didn't even know it existed. So hopefully they do the Switch versions worldwide.
Okay. They've been briefed now.
Yeah. Very funny to be the person that lets them know. It's like, hey, yeah, this is the thing now. It's like, okay. But yeah, I played... Very, very briefly, I got hands-on with the Switch version of Prelude to the Fallen. Obviously, the other two games are going to be very, very similar tech-wise, so I didn't feel the need to check those out specifically. One of my main issues I had with the PC version of the Utada no Mono trilogy is that they were locked to 720p 30fps, which ironically enough means that on Switch, assuming it's the same resolution, that is not a problem. It's going to be the same exact resolution and frame rate as the other versions of the game, which is also half the reason why on like one of the first things I added to my Steam Deck RPG list was play Utada no Mono here. It is literally the best place to play these games. Because it's like, if it's 720p, that's not a problem. And you're going to want to play it at 30 FPS on like a handheld anyway. So it's like, that's not going to be a problem. But yeah, it seems to be a decent port. Nothing else to say there. It's like, I'm surprised it took them this long. I am so surprised it took them this long.
I wonder if they're also trying to recoup from the cost from, like, it seems like that turn-based RPG that they
Monochrome did. Monochrome Mobius? I told the Aquaplus guy at the booth, it's like, yeah, I actually reviewed Monochrome Mobius, and he was like, thank you. It's like, I'm not going to tell you my review score. I don't want to ruin your good mood.
But you did cover it.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so I checked that out. No idea if that's going to come to the West. I assume that there's no reason that NISA wouldn't want to do it, just because it's like translations already exist. It's like free real estate. Like,
yeah,
I'm sure they'll try to do it now that they know it exists. But as of right now, no confirmation. So going through the list again, did you talk about First Berserker Kazan last week?
Not really.
We pointed out the article, but we didn't dive into it.
Yeah. So I also played a bit of that. I also interviewed some of the development team, and that'll be going up probably on Monday. Yeah. I've been trying to space out stuff while also making sure I have enough time to get through certain like menacingly large RPGs on my plate right now. Very fun.
We're
time.
All feeling it. Yep.
Yeah. So I got hands on. It's interesting because one of the things I even mentioned in the preview article, which is kind of a cutout from the interview, is that what section I played, Kazan, there's an interesting kind of balance between the fact that there's like a weightiness to the combat, which makes sense because he's like becoming the first berserker. I understand it. Josh, you know way more about DNF than I do, which is literally nothing.
Sort of, yeah. I mean, I do have like a tiny bit of knowledge, but like, yeah.
Which is still way more than me.
All I know is like he like dual wields like crazy ass weapons, pretty much. Yeah. He's going to be very freeform in that game.
The way they're describing this game is a hardcore action RPG, so I will use that instead of the obvious term that everyone is going to call this. It is one of those sorts of games. So it feels good. The animations are really good. There's a lot of impact to it. What I played, I was pretty happy with it. There's like a perfect like guard system for parrying, kind of like Sekiro. There's like not much else to say.
I'm interested to see like what the full game is like, because they've only showed off really like the kind of their beginning sections and like a little tiny bit of like seems like the early boss battles, but like I'm really interested to see like, you know, how this game opens up, because they've been very sort of close to their chest about the way they're revealing this game. But everything I've seen and it's like heard so far from like people who like actually got hands on, because
One thing they did say is it's level based, like open world. So it's more like Neo in that sense.
Oh, yeah. I prefer that over big open world. Yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. So yeah, hopefully it turns out all right, because, you know, I think
so far, I'm enjoying
everyone's
my
like
play.
Yeah,
also.
Yeah.
Now keep in mind, this could be a case of I played it on PC. It could be a case where they made sure that all the shaders were pre-compiled, because I think this is Unreal Engine. It feels like it's Unreal Engine.
Mm-hmm.
So as of right now, I didn't get the specs of the PC, but it was like on a 4K monitor, so I'm assuming it was pretty high end, at like a 4080 or a 4090 or something.
Was it English voice in that version that you played? I mean, they kind of tried to advertise like, was it Ben Starr was in it when the second trailer showed?
I think it was Japanese voices. It might. I don't remember for sure, because like almost everything I played this this like it was in Japanese because it was TGS. Like
makes sense.
But yeah, First Berserker Kazan, good time. You definitely already talked about Fantasian last week. What else is there to say? It's funny. Originally, they were like, hey, so we have a PS5 set aside for press appointments. And it's like, can I play it on Steam Deck, though? We literally just had someone check it out on PS5 at PAX a few weeks ago, but it wasn't playable on Steam Deck at PAX, was it? So
no.
I saw that and I just told them, I'm going to be honest. Is it possible for me to play it there instead? Because that's the only way this makes sense.
Yeah.
So
it's cool that you got to try it on Steam, because I think a lot of people are interested like in checking out that game on a Steam Deck.
Yeah, probably going to be the best way to play it, because like I said in the preview, it ran at a locked 90 FPS on Steam Deck OLED. It had a bunch of headroom, so probably plenty of battery life. I don't know why I didn't think that it would run this well, because when you think about it, the only thing it's rendering is the 3D model of your main character. Everything else is pre-rendered, so of course it's going to run perfectly. It's got full 16
backgrounds.
Yeah, it's got full 16 by 10 like aspect ratio, so it like fills up the full screen. Obviously, since it's Steam Deck like compatible and whatnot, like I don't think Valve has updated it yet, but they had it playable at TGS. They had like multiple stations set up with it. I already added it to the Steam Deck RPG list.
Yeah, I think it'll be good to go.
Yeah, if they're feeling confident enough to showcase it at an event on Steam Deck, it's like that's just by default. It's going on the list.
That's like
I've seen some people be a little bit more dismissive, and they're like, "Well, it's a mobile game. Of course, it's going to run well on Steam Deck." Well, I'm like, not necessarily. Like, you know, the resolution aspect ratio is different. You know, it's the touch controls versus having the analog stick and the actual physical controls.
And,
like,
and also it could be like cutscene stuff sometimes. Yeah,
yeah. And even if it was like likely to happen, it's still worth shouting out to say, "Hey, this game is well optimized for this system if you've got it, and that's how you like to play your games."
Yeah, because sometimes occasionally you'll just have like weird bugs on Steam Deck for some games. Like, it's never a given for sure.
Right. Yeah, that's a good way to word it. It's never a given. I saw that you had put on your Twitter, James. I don't think we've had a chance to speak to this. Your interview with for Phantom Brave: The Lost Hero. You got some like pretty candid responses on your interview there that seemed pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's, you know, an interview is going to be a wild ride when after like your first question, which is fairly innocuous, it's just like a simple thing where it's like, "Hey, so this series has been kind of dormant for 20 years, like how does it feel to like basically be handling the story for this new entry and what is now a franchise?" And he was like, I originally didn't want to do it. I even said I wanted to use new characters if I had to do it. And then my boss told me, stop being a coward. That is not an exaggeration. That's exactly what he said. That is exactly what he said in the interview. I'm really happy with how this interview went out. Honestly, I think it's probably my favorite interview I've done, just because there's some really interesting answers to my questions here.
Yeah, I love down to earth responses like that. Like, it's just one of those things, like, you know, behind like the red tape and everything, just kind of giving you, you know, the full truth of the matter of like, hey, you know, this is how it went down. And those are the best kinds of interviews.
Yeah, it's also like a really, it's just, I'm glad that they're pushing this game a bunch, because NIS need a winner. And you can even tell in the interview like itself, where it's like, they're trying to make Phantom Brave into their second Disgaea. They want another franchise that can be consistently selling like Disgaea.
I actually reinstalled Phantom Brave on PC like a few days ago, and I'm like starting to like just do a replay of it before the sequel, because I'm oddly kind of excited for the sequel.
Especially after hearing some of the answers from like Giovanna-san, I'm excited. Like, it seems like he understands what made the first game story so memorable. And for reference, Giovanna was the person that was behind the writing for Disgaea 7, which everyone I know that's played Disgaea 7 is like, yeah, no, this is the best Disgaea since 4.
All the best, you know. Hopefully The Lost Hero is awesome, and that's coming out late January for console. And
January
later.
30th, going to be
technically January, but at the last possible moment, and then just
but it's also the PC release for that is like a later date.
Yeah, I'll be honest though, like I did check out the PS5 version in Anime Expo, and that was like 4K 60. So it's like, if you want a physical copy, anyways, like if you want to wait for the PC version, obviously do. But if your main thing is just making sure it runs well, PS5 version will be just fine. Mm-hmm. But
was there anything at TGS that you weren't expecting to enjoy as much as you did, or something that you weren't planning on seeing that ended up like leaving an impression on you?
I deliberately did not plan on checking out level 5 stuff, because last year, like most of the stuff they had this year was stuff they had last year. Like, right. I didn't play Fantasy Life I, though apparently the demo was pretty different, so maybe I should have. It is interesting, because the main reason why I even ended up seeing Professor Layden, because I decided, it's like, you know what, we can do a branching path, and I figured, well, it is a big game. Well, maybe I should give it a shot. And the other thing was I had a buddy of mine who he's a really big Professor Layton fan. He just told me, if you have a chance, please let me know how it is. So.
Was Deck of Police playable again, or did completely scrap that build?
Well, Deck of Police, I've seen some people like speculate that the main reason it's been delayed so much is because of the overwhelmingly positive reception from last year. And if that's the case, I feel terrible.
What do you mean? What?
I didn't understand that. Deck of Police got delayed to 2026, and also is getting an anime adaptation. I've seen multiple people speculate the main reason it was delayed wasn't just for the anime, but it's like, oh, they're going to really put a lot more budget to push this because of the great reception that it had at TGS last year.
Okay, yeah. For me, I'm just like, take as much time as you need. Take as much time as you need to really, release it in a great state. So, if that's like kind of the reason, then sure,
Also, it's getting a PC version now for sure. So I'm happy about that. But anyways, Professor Layton, not an RPG. Like I said in the tweet, though, unless you count Really Polite Gentleman as an RPG. It's a Professor Layton game. I was surprised because I specifically made the appointment. And I was like, it probably won't be in English. That's fine. I can like get through it just fine, whatever. It had an English build. It had an English build, and they let us capture gameplay. So I was like, ooh.
Yeah, I saw some Japanese footage, and I saw like it was at the very beginning they gave you that option. I was like, oh, they actually have, offer English support. Yep. And some of the Japanese capture that I saw.
Which gives me the impression that, thank God, maybe this won't be delayed or will actually come out early 2025 like they say it will.
Maybe. I'm interested in, like, because they had, like, a whole separate group. I forgot there's, like, it's like Quiz Dungeon or something like that. They had, like, a separate group being in charge of the puzzle design of this game, because I think, historically, Layton's like staff internally, like I don't know if the person in charge of like the early Layton games, something happened in with the staff, or there's a change up on the puzzle designer, and after
mentioned it in the preview itself, the Branching Path preview itself. Mm-hmm. The original like kind of puzzle master for the Layton series was this like professor at some Japanese university, and he was really old, so mm-hmm. In 2016, he passed away of old age, so needed to find someone else to handle the puzzles ever since.
Right, and then from what I understand, like ever since, unfortunately, the old puzzle master passed on, the reception to the Professor Layton with the new puzzle master and the later titles wasn't really as well received as the previous one, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, so it's like I don't know exactly how it'll like shake out in the long run, but what I played, it seems good. Man, I feel kind of bad for Level 5 because there were multiple people at TGS this year that were covering it from Western outlets, more than last year, noticeably so. Mm-hmm. I think I was the only person actually bothered to play Professor Layton, unless maybe Alessandro at Kotaku mentioned it in his roundup, but other than that, I think I was the only.
And this would be the first
that checked it out.
This would be the first link on HD console, or has there been one?
No, there was a Lady Layton had a
Switch
version. Oh
right, I forgot about that. Yeah, I forgot they did Lady Layton. And did that ever get a Western release, or was that Japanese?
Yes, it did. Yeah. It even got a physical release.
Okay, cool. Cool.
But it's probably not a good sign that people didn't even know that that came over and had a physical release.
I totally for blanked on Lady Layton until you mentioned. I was like, oh yeah.
I'll be honest. I've not played a Layton game, so it's not really in my like purview or in my just line of sight. I did not know there was a Lady Layton. But maybe that's just me living under a rock.
So one anecdote that I will share is, like I said, I did not originally intend on having a Level 5 appointment. During some downtime on the first business day of TGS, I went by level 5 booth, and they do have overseas reception, which is why the whole situation with Megaton Musashi was so confusing to me, because it's like, I know you have Western PR, they're internal. Besides the point, I asked, you wouldn't happen to have an opening for a Professor Layton appointment either today or tomorrow? And I saw the sheet, because obviously when they're like checking you in, they have the sheet, and when they like pencil in someone for an appointment, they write it down. They had like 5 or so stations for Professor Layton, and they had them chunked off in like half hour blocks. When I checked at like 3:30 p.m. on the end of the first business day to see, can I check it out now or can I check it out tomorrow? They had 4 appointments overall before they checked me, before they added me to it, of people checking out Professor Layton as press the next day. I don't know what it is, because like their presence at TGS this year and last year was massive. They had the most impressive looking booth. They had the most playable demos across like a bunch of different games. And like last year, especially, like everything I played there, like obviously, like I said that Fantasy Life I seemed like a bit too derivative, but I still had a good time. But it's like, I don't know what's going on, but it seems like they're really struggling, even like in Japan, because like, yeah, people, like there's lines for folks to play their games, but every booth has a line. And the waiting to play Professor Layton, if I didn't have an appointment, was like 15, 20 minutes versus like half, like 45 minutes to an hour at any, like anywhere else.
It's also just competition, because you have like games like Monster Hunter Wilds, Metal Gear Solid Delta, and just like a whole bunch of other like really, really like it's a really competitive time right now, I'm sure.
Yeah, but you know, all of those had tickets. So you got your ticket and then you didn't wait in line, because they just, instead of having it be like, okay, wait in line for an hour, it's like, grab your ticket at the beginning of the day, come back at your like time slot on your ticket. That way you can check out other shit.
Yeah, but also, like, I'm just thinking of, like, other factors, right? Because this might be just a matter of focus as well. Of, like, hey, the admittedly, the Layton series isn't as popular as, like, Monster Hunter and Metal Gear Solid. Just, like, in the West in general, like, Layton is a very niche fan base. Obviously, that doesn't, you know, doesn't make it seem, like, ineligible to, like, get coverage, right? But, like, you're thinking about, like, what are the focus games that we're budgeting for that'll get the most eyes, most impressions?
Yep.
In our time,
Capcom's just had a lot of momentum in the previous years, and Level 5 hasn't. And not just Capcom, but like Level 5 has had a quiet 2020s so far. So they kind of need to build that momentum back up, which ever since they announced all 4 of those games like at the same time, Inazuma 11, Deca Police, like, and Fantasy Life, like all those were announced. Were they all announced at the same event, like back in 2022? And we had our big thing, like Level 5 is back, and we should have phrased it like Level 5 is on the track to maybe be back.
Yeah, I mean, we did. Yeah, and it's like even earlier this year, Megaton Musashi, right? Like I think really highly of that game. I still do, and like the leading, the most coverage of that game, of like the context of like whatever people mentioned that game in the West, like, why isn't anyone talking about this? You know, and that's fair. You know, like, they just marketed it very, very, very poorly in the West. Like,
yeah, and I did even ask them about that. It's like, hey, do you know what was up with this? And I actually got someone gave me their card and said, hey, next time we have a game coming up, like, reach out to this, like in addition to whoever you're reaching out to, and I'll make sure that you get through. And it's like, okay, thank you. Hopefully that works out, because like,
We didn't get a Megaton Musashi code until like 2 weeks after release.
Yeah,
it's like, okay.
It's like Level 5. It wasn't just us either. I know, like, GameSpot had the same problem. Yes. GameSpot of all outlets. It's like, if major outlets are reaching out to you trying to cover your game, and you're just absolutely fumbling like that, it's like, launch day code, whatever. It happens. And obviously, nobody's entitled to a code, but when people are trying to cover your game and you're making it actively difficult, it's like, you gotta ask, what's going on?
Yeah. That was, hopefully it won't happen again, but we'll see the next Level 5 release. But yeah, we covered the Level 5 event last week as well, you know, all their announcements, and I think out of that there was some suspicion that the Yokai Watch successor, the something something mansion, Like, people were... There's some speculation that, like, in the video, the promo video they used for, like, the next concept of that, or the concept of that game, there's, like, they might be using AI for the background art and stuff, like, generative AI, and, like, there's been no confirmation one way or the other, but people have, you know, speculated due to, like, how some things are framed and how things show up.
It's also worth noting that Level 5 had publicly stated that they were, like, they... Mm-hmm. It's not like this would be out of nowhere, because like Level 5 was like testing AI out. So
I remember that with like, I think one of the promo videos for Megaton, like outside the game promo, like there was like one weird promo on their YouTube that had like disclaimer, like, hey, this was used, this promo was made using like AI or something like that.
Yeah.
Which is like kind of a weird ad. So, you know, I'm just thinking like, hopefully, you know, the Level 5 comes out one way or the other, like at least discloses that info. And since it's if it's true, and if it's a concept, hopefully they actually have like real human people, you know, working on the actual final thing that they're producing, and they're just using that for like maybe like some early concept.
Oh yeah, speaking of AI, I checked out that really weird Kaino Kiseki.
Oh yeah, AI, yeah.
Did it work?
So let's provide some background first, because this came out of Digital Hearts. It was like a press release before Tokyo Game Show officially kicked off, and I kind of give us a little bit of like explanation of what it is before checked it out.
So the way they described it kind of like buries the lead on what it is. It is not sections of Kaino Kiseki that have been AI translated. They are random, completely unvoiced, and mostly unfucking like captioned scenes, where then they ask, of these five choices, which would fit best, do you think?
Let's say it's like a scene with like Vaughn talking to Yume at the bar or something, like, and then there'll be like a line from Vaughn talking to Yume. Does it like show like five possible like English translations of
like they set up the scene, it's like, what would be the best appropriate response? And it's like, it is so weird. Like, it already feels bad, because it's like, it's AI, it never feels good. I even asked, like, straight up, so what was this trained on? And the thing that really concerns me is that they were a bit coy about what the training data was, but specifically they said, oh, we got it from a website, which tells me, you know what a website is? Trails through the database. Which has every single script of all of the Trails games uploaded to a single website. They could have used that as their training data.
Okay, so when you go out to that booth, and then obviously like the AI was translating in multiple languages, like English, and I think, was it Chinese as well?
It was English, Chinese, and Korean. Also, the other thing that I should mention is that it was a multiple choice on an iPad, so you don't actually, there's nothing to prove that those responses were actually AI generated. It could just be an entire grift, even beyond the fact that AI is a grift.
Does it show you like the dialogue box with the original Japanese text, or is it just like, it just shows you the multiple choices and no context of like what the actual
just shows the multiple line. Choices and no context?
That's crazy. Okay. Okay. It's like, how do you even know? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's weird. Yeah. That's weird. Okay. That's just like, because if you have like no like original basis of like what the original line was, how could you even like, even make a selection, if you're even trying to like go, if you're even trying to like try this out in like an earnest fashion, just like for educational purposes, like just to check out like what they're doing, right?
Yeah, because I was originally thinking maybe I'll actually write up something about this, because it's like, just for like, it is maybe important that people know this is going on, but like, mm-hmm. my takeaway was, I don't think this is actually, I think Falcom kind of got grifted here. There's nothing here, man.
Yeah, that's a really bizarre, I don't know, exercise or experiment or whatever thing they're doing. That's how it went down. That's crazy. That's okay. Well, I mean, thanks for checking it out, because that's one of those things. It's like, like the press release came out, you're like, that's really weird. But just hearing like how it was actually executed on the show floor, it's like, that's even more weird. You know, that's even crazier than you think.
Yeah, the last thing I checked out was Mado Monogatari. I guess we can call it Sorcery Saga because that's what the most recent game was translated as and whatnot. It's neat. I hope it gets localized because it is a Compile Heart game that I actually, from what I played, I think will be a lot of fun.
And what's the gameplay like in that game?
So, it's a real-time mystery dungeon.
Okay.
So, like, the floors themselves are randomly generated. You explore them and whatnot. There's, like, you can find items, there's traps, all that sort of things. You find enemies on the map. You run into them. And then it starts an ATB free-form motion, like, turn-based battle.
Okay.
You're, like, walking around, and you can just, like, whack enemies with your, like, staff and whatnot. But also, there's an ATB bar, which determines when you can do these, like, your spells. And the spells, there's, like, a spell circle on the ground to showcase the area of effect. So you can hit multiple enemies with your spell if they're both, like, within the area of effect when you cast it. But also, in addition to that, you have, like, the fever system, where if you actually do, like, if you time your spell with another party member, which you don't control, spell of the same attribute, it gives you, like, a buff of that attribute. And if you get multiple, and then there's, like, ultimate skills you can do that cost some of those buffs, depending on the type of buff they are. So, like, if you have two fire buffs, which means that you've, like, timed your fire spell with another party member twice, at least, and they're, like, right next to each other on the, like, list of your buffs, then you can expend those to do, like, a skill that does damage to every enemy on the field and, like, also has, like, some other impacts and whatnot. It is not what I expected, but it's like, oh, this is actually somewhat interesting.
That seems pretty interesting, yeah. Huh. Yeah, hopefully we get a Western release. That seems like a really
I'm sure it will get a Western release. Like, I know that, like, Idea Factory International is a bit shaky sometimes when it comes to these things, but there's no way in hell that they won't do this, especially considering they can say it's tangentially related to Puyo Puyo. Look, they're right there, the Puyos.
Yeah, the market is like that. I witnessed the origin of the Puyo Puyo. Yeah.
Look, when I think of Puyo Puyo, I do not think of the Puyos. I think of the Carbuncle.
Here's Carbuncle. It was right there, too. There was a very funny scene in the demo I played where it was like, they're trying to have Carbuncle do a distraction. And it's like, oh no, the distraction was too strong. We almost killed them.
Dang.
So.
Okay, that's cool. That's thanks, James, for your time at TGS. It seemed like a weird one this year for sure. So I think there's like it seemed like a good time. That there were some really cool games, but at the same time, it just feels like it feels like it's getting more and more. I don't know. Like a friend of mine kind of described it best because he's attended a lot of TGSs where it's like it feels like it's getting less like. It's kind of less of like a ground root sort of thing and more like E3 buttoned up year over year.
That is true. Well, one thing I will say is that because I had a lot of appointments this time, I did not have as much time to check out the indie game area. Like last year, I checked out the indie game area. I specifically blocked out time so I could do so. There's still so many indie games, so many RPGs. I wish I had had the chance to like check them out. Maybe if I actually was able to attend one of the public days, because I only did the business days this year.
Yeah.
If I had attended a public day, I probably would have spent that public day just at the indie game booths, because that's like the one section of TGS that I feel like probably you could have checked out games without worrying about like feeling like a sardine in a can. But
it's been several years, but I remember when I would attend old E3s, remember those? And PAX, like the indie area is where you kind of get the more personal one-on-one experience with the devs. And obviously people aren't packed like sardines, as you said, to get 20 minutes on Monster Hunter. So sometimes those are where the most interesting stories come out of.
It's interesting though, because like even TGS, like with the smaller like companies like Aquaplus, like just I had a chat with, like I said, the person there, and same thing with like the person at Falcom that who's my contact and whatnot. So it's like you get that at TGS just because like the overall state of the industry there is you have a lot more of those like AA, or I guess in like Aqua Plus's case, like single A, not indie, but definitely like how many people do they even have over there? Like 30? Because they got to be smaller than Falcom, right? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's like you still get a lot of that like one-on-one experience even with the smaller teams. You don't get that with Capcom, obviously. Hell no, unless you have like specifically an interview with them. But
yeah.
The smaller companies like NIS, Aqua Plus, Falcom, even Level 5 to an extent, you still get that. But yeah, I wish I had had a chance to dedicate time to the indie area. That's like the one regret I have. But it's like I checked out so much and I'm not sure if I'm going to do like another preview of Phantom Brave just because I played it at Anime Expo. I did play it at TGS, but it wasn't different enough for me to be like, eh.
And we're so close to release too, you know, it's not that crazy.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. Thank you, James, for your, you know, time. And hopefully you enjoyed your vacation there in Japan. Yep. It seemed like very awesome. So yeah, that is TGS behind us. And I think the next big event is like the Game Awards, I think, which is going to be December. Yeah. Yeah.
Have they announced nominations for that, though? I saw that the nominations for Golden Joysticks were up. I don't think Game of
Thrones. Those always go up. Yeah. Like Golden Joysticks always is super, super early.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I don't think they've done the Game Awards nominations yet.
Probably in like a couple weeks or something.
Yeah.
So like I kind of preempted earlier, a lot of the games that are coming out in October, where we have slated to speak about in the next upcoming podcast, Metaphor next week, Romantic Saga, Yeast, all that coming out after that. So before we go into the news here, of which there's not a lot, I know Josh has put some time into a game that released late last year that I believe we covered, but we haven't really had a lot of firsthand experience with. And that is For the King 2, released last November. And it sounds like, Josh, you managed to put some time aside to go through For the King 2. So I know it's a little bit of a tangent compared to all the releases that are coming out that are, you know, knocking on our doorstep. But at least you can go over what your experience with For the King 2 has been.
So this is basically, this is a game I previewed last year at last year's PAX West. And I had a good time with it. But apparently, like, you know, when the 4 release came out on Steam, it was a pretty buggy launch, and so I was just like decided, okay, I'll just wait on it. It's fine. So the current Steam turn-based demo fest or whatever had a sale on it, and there's been, you know, about a year's worth of patches, and optimizations, and fixes on it. So I figured, you know, it was a good time to check it out. I was able to rope in 3 other friends, so we got like a full 4-party co-op going session going on. It's basically like a D&D. Co-op experience, and then like there's different campaigns separated by chapters. So we fully completed chapter 1, and then like our chapter 2 playthrough that we started last night is not going well. It might be one of those like restarts on that campaign because we fell behind in like level curving, and it's kind of like a miserable experience with our party composition not getting really great loot. But it's a pretty fun experience where, you know, it's basically like a tabletop game where the grid of the overworld map that you move around in dictated by like almost like a dice roll of how much you can move per turn is separated like through hexagon tiles, and then you'll run into like towns, random events that may like, you know, earn loot. You enter dungeons together. You fight enemies on the overworld, and then if there are like any other person nearby, they like pull in like, you know, all nearby enemies and allies into that fight, and fights are done on a turn-based a session where it's like a turn-based fight that each side, both your allies and the enemies, have like a front row and back row, and so there's a lot of positioning involved, especially when maybe you have friends or party members that have shields that can guard the back row person. So like squish your people, like archers, mages, bards at the back row can be defended by people in the front row if they have shields and so forth. And it's a very deliberate sort of game where like every action matters, because there'll be fights where like there's like a lot of enemies and you can like really soak in the damage. And since damage is persistent, you don't get like any free heals after the fight or anything. The only free heal you get is like if you level up. And you know, level ups aren't that frequent. Like our chapter 1 campaign was like our max levels there is like level 6, level 7. You know, so it's not like you're leveling up a lot. So yeah, every level up counts.
That's kind of true to a lot of tabletop RPGs, is that each level up is very critical in terms of making sure that you have like a plan in mind for your build and how your skills and your feats interact.
Yeah, so that's just like, it's like a very chill, like, you know, like tabletop session sort of with friends. You know, before you start like a new campaign, you can like select a class, sort of like your appearance, and some of these perks like are just like starting like items, like, you know, like maybe like a health curative and a tent starting out. As you progress through the game, there's like persistent progression through the game where you can pick up these lore books from treasure chests, and that feeds into like the persistent progression. So like you can use these lore books. These lore books are like currency. So like, say you pick up a lore book and you get like 10 currency from it, you can then unlock like starting perks, like a bonus plus to your stats, or like you have a chance to activate like a power up buff on a tile, like sort of like these perks. You can apply those at the start of like the next playthrough with a new character and so forth. So it's a persistent progression that doesn't really get in the way of like just normally enjoying the game. It's not like core to, you know, fully kidding a build. It's just like nice to have sort of things and rewarding you for exploring you know, the world thoroughly and so forth. And as you're exploring the world with your friends, there's like a doom counter on the screen, because as one turn progresses, there's like, you know, a day night cycle. But if you dilly dally too long, you know, there are storyline beats that's like, hey, you need to like kind of be urgent about going to the next storyline thing, because you're working against a doom counter as well, so you can't like turtle up forever or something like that. So it's a fun, like, you know, just sort of like very like on the more simpler side of like a D&D sort of thing, but it's an effective enough like sort of like game to like just kind of like sit back, relax, and it's not too involved like other like D&D experiences like Baldur's Gate 3. You know, like, you know, it's a very complex sort of game with a lot of things going on. In comparison, For the King is a more casual sort of experience, but you still get like a very gratifying, rewarding experience playing it with friends.
I think there's been a few games that have been trying to tackle a pretty thin but existing slice for that casual tabletop-esque experience. Like I think of Baladins or Wildermyth that Adam covered, and I like For the King 1 and 2. Like trying to get it, like, not everyone has the time, energy, patience, or maybe just like for multiple reasons, like having to sit through multiple very long sessions with a group of people with differing schedules. If we can just have something that's a little bit more drop in, drop out, a little pared back, but keeping the core experience intact.
Yeah, like we've been playing for like 2 to 3 hour sessions, and maybe sometimes a little less if need be. But like we just like stop, fire it up, and like we're all free and we all feel like playing. You know, so it's been kind of like a nice kind of experience to like just wind down. You know, the night before, you know, next day.
So thank you, Josh, finding the time to touch on For the King 2, because I think this is really our first time to really dedicate any bandwidth to it. Before we're all swamped. And in the coming weeks with everything that's coming out, I know that you have a lot of things on your plate that you're working on that we'll be able to speak to in not too long.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we'll go into the news section. It's not a lot here. I think this month is more about games releasing and game coverage rather than game announcements. It seems like that was last month. But before I do that, we do have one feature that we want to call out on the website. And this is something we do every year, primarily, almost entirely helmed by Adam. So he might talk about it next week. But he has published his first go at the RPG list for 2025. This is something that we reference internally, at least me personally, a lot. We try to have a bulleted list organized by month by all the key RPGs that are releasing in any given year. And we just now published our first draft for the RPGs coming out in 2025. Of course, this is mostly covering games like January through March, because those are the dates that we're aware of, but also games that were slated to release this year but push into next year at unspecified times, or specified for only a certain quarter or season. We've got that up on the site. If you search for like RPGs 2025, you should be able to find our list. So go ahead and bookmark it. And, you know, we'll probably be referring to that when trying to plan out our own schedules. And of course, we've got the RPG 2024 list for the remainder of this year up on the site as well. Oh, and also, I guess I'll just call out if you see any omissions or any errors or anything like that, just let us know. Give us a tweet, put a comment in our Discord, join our Discord, and we'll get that updated as soon as we can.
And also just comment on the site as well.
There you go.
Yep.
All right. I have two things here that I have marked as announcements. None of these are things that we've teed up in the past. This is coming out of, I thought this is not CGS. I'm not sure where this was announced, but.
No, this is just a one-off press release pretty much.
Gotcha. So Saber Interactive and Paramount Game Studios has announced that they're working on a AAA RPG for the Avatar The Last Airbender IP that is in development. So Avatar, it seems like I watched it growing up many years ago. It seems like there's been a lot of effort to try to leverage that IP in the past couple of years. There's, of course, the Netflix show. There was a mobile game that I think released and not canceled, but shut down last year. There was another game that released on PC in late 2023 that has not great reviews. So it feels like there's an effort from Paramount Game Studios, and I'm not sure who the owner of the IP is, probably just Paramount, corporate consolidation, who knows who's at the top anymore. The Netflix show, I know it's a lot of friends that were really eager to see, like, oh, this is going to correct the issues with, previous adaptations floundering. And
Night Shyamalan movie.
Yeah. But it doesn't seem like it landed. It kind of seems like it came and went, but I'm not really in that space, so maybe it was received.
Yeah, okay. But the impression of the last Airbender Netflix show is like it's very condensed. So like because of its like runtime, because of how many episodes it got, it felt like it was nothing was able to really develop in it whatsoever. So everything was really really condensed down. So not like it feels like there's like really like very very rushed development because it was just like just trying to hit the hype. High points, boom, boom, boom. That was the impression that I got from people talking to people about it.
And there was a Fortnite crossover where they added Avatar's characters and skins. So yeah, they're trying to push it. They're trying to revive the IP because it's it was dormant ever since Korra ended for a long while. It just seems like nothing's quite been the breakout hit that they wanted. So we have a new AAA RPG in development. We don't really know anything other than that it's work has commenced in terms of platforms. Screenshots, trailers, logos, anything like that. But I guess we'll keep an eye on it because I know there's a lot of fans of this IP that would be eager to see a cool video game project attached to it. But just unfortunately, the precedent has not been great. But I guess we'll be optimistic because why not? And we'll report on it as soon as we see more. The other announcement that I have this week, this is actually, I say it's an announcement. It's the first time we've covered it on our site, but it was first unveiled back in 2022. This is a game called Etheria Restart. And Josh, I'll just hand it over to you because I know that you had kind of decided to cover this game late last week. It got a new trailer at TGS. It was originally supposed to release last year, but it's currently slated to still release this year within the last few months. So what is Etheria Restart and what have they shown this week?
It's a free-to-play RPG coming to PC via Steam and mobile devices. The footage that I saw from like earlier closed betas is like a turn-based RPG with a timeline system. So like even though like a lot of the recent footage like makes it look like an action game, it's actually a turn-based RPG. It's hard to know like whether what sort of systems or features this game will have that'll set it apart from the competition. Because you've had obviously a lot of other styles of this sort of RPG on the market already, thanks to like HoYoverse. With specifically Honkai Star Rail as a turn-based RPG with that anime aesthetic, and so forth. So this one like takes place like in some sort of like virtual reality sort of thing called Etheria, and you're gonna fight threats there because there are things in that world that like threaten humanity and so forth. So they showed off like a new trailer for it at TGS. And kind of teasing, that it'll launch this year, but nothing really more outside of that, really. So, it's just one of those things that, like, it hit our email at the right time, so I was like, okay, I'll just go cover this on the site, pretty much. There have been people excited for it, and, I don't know what to make of it, because, there's been so many of these sorts of games. hitting the market thanks to, like, you know, Genshin being super, super popular and kind of paving the way for that sort of aesthetic and getting more of these games to be more publicly in the mainstream.
Yeah, you just never know which of these are going to just fizzle out or be a breakout hit. It seems like there's nothing, very rarely do they fall in between.
Yeah.
We got a couple update trailers for some things that we've talked about previously that are slated for next year. This one I'll just kind of mention in passing. Capcom has been releasing lots of preview videos for Monster Hunter Wilds, and of course we just spoke about it at length with James's hands-on experience. They just put out a beginner's guide video just kind of talking about some of the high-level Monster Hunter concepts, clearly kind of identified for potentially newer or lapsed fans of the IP, and also looking at a few of the new monsters that are in the game. Talks about endemic life, base camp, some of the monster kind of attributes, things like that. So we have that covered on the site as well.
Yeah, I think the only like super noteworthy thing here is like they do have like a feature from Rise where you can have like NPC hunters join your hunt. So like if you throw up a flare in Wilds and you're not connected online or anything, NPC hunters will actually join your session. So like that was like actually a feature in Rise that like people appreciated, like where they wanted to party up but they didn't want to party up with like other like real party members. They wanted, because they like playing the game solo, but they wanted to, like, you know, maybe we wanted the extra help.
One thing specifically to say, I'm pretty sure that is specifically a Sunbreak feature that was added.
Yeah, that's right. The expansion to Rise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A game that we covered back in August that is slated to release sometime next year is Chernobylite 2 Exclusion Zone. We talked about the PS5 and PC release window in the announcement trailer back in August and talked about how it has a very different, like, third-person perspective for the sequel. Like, the sequel seems like it's changing up things kind of majorly from the original game. And we got a new trailer. They just call it gameplay trailer to the publisher's, or sorry, the developer's YouTube channel, just showing a lot of different environments. It says gameplay trailer. The back half does have some third-person, basically, here's the sorts of things that you'll be looking and doing when playing this game. But a lot of it is more like free camera roam, almost like environmental trailer and some cutscenes and some dialogue. But it's just a further look at the game that is kind of a potential kind of cult classic, I think. It seems like it has a pretty cult following from the initial game that people think highly of it. And obviously did well enough to get a sequel and slated for some point next year. A couple other updates for some upcoming games. Square Enix has been releasing a lot of post-updates newsletters for Romancing Saga 2. They had a more recent one that talked specifically about when you have glimmers that are specific to only a specific weapon, not a weapon type. Talked a little bit about certain characters and their kind of classes and the types of abilities they have. Of course, if you really want a good preview of what the game is like, I just finished the demo, and like I can already tell after playing through the demo, which allows you to play like an hour or two of the prologue and transfers over to the full game, that I'm really looking forward to Romancing Saga 2, Revenge of the Seven. It just seems like it's a really smart evolution of the Saga core concepts, modernized a little bit without losing the identity of the series, in terms of how the glimmers are a little bit less opaque now in terms of what you should be doing in order to power up certain abilities or certain attributes, what weapons you provide, which bonuses to your character, which you should have equipped. It's a little bit less obscure, a little less tea leaves in terms of learning by doing is kind of how I describe Saga. And it still has that. It's just a little bit more like, hey, if you use this ability, we're going to literally put a bulb next to this ability and say, if you keep using this.
Yeah,
it's more upfront. But of course, we have a lot more. When I was scrolling through this blog post and just kind of looking at the character models and the artwork, I'm just like, man, this is being developed by Zine, which I believe did Trials of Mana.
Yes,
it seems like it's a really good fit for this game. I do love Scarlet Grace and Emerald Beyond, but they're not lookers. And this one is just like, I think it's a really pretty art style. I've enjoyed the demo and just looking forward to the full release later this month.
I'm just still blown away that they're using Romance of Saga 2, because like that's already felt like an expansive game back then with the current technology that they were working under. And this one just feels like, man, they're really going to render all of that in 3D and have voice acting and scenes and everything, just like have fully 3D environments. Like that's insane. And like, it's just like, man, they're doing so much for this remake. It's just like, it feels like it gets kind of captures that magic all over again. It's like, man, this game was already felt really, really big back then, but then seeing it like fully realized in 3D and having like modern production values, like that's a crazy amount of work.
And it seems like it's pretty faithful, because like I was playing the demo and there's like a little secret area in one of the first dungeons where you get like an accessory, And I was trying to figure out, like, where do you get this? And I Google and I find results like people talking about the, you know, back from 5 years ago, like, where do you get this accessory in this dungeon? I'm like, oh, it's there it is, only from the original, not the original release, but the prior release of the game. So it's just cool to kind of see, like, oh, this still carries over to the new rendition. It looks like this blog post, it was weapon-specific tech was the term that I was missing earlier. They also talk about ley lines. Ley lines, they're introduced in the demo in the final boss fight, how different battles can have an elemental kind of surge that you can that can affect the parameters of the battle that you can disrupt by using the opposite element. There's six available elements, like fire, water, light, dark, kind of the usual flair there. I really enjoyed the demo. I'm really looking forward to the full game. This one I did not follow up on specifically, but we have a TGS panel kind of summary about the next upcoming major update to Final Fantasy XIV Dawn Trail, update 7.1. James, you or Chow might be the ones that can most clearly speak to this about what are the sorts of things you've got highlighted for the next major update for Dawn Trail. I don't know if you've had a chance to see this in your busy week.
Yeah, I have. So it's very simple. The Final Fantasy XIV dev team hates Americans because if you're a raider, you are not going to have any time during the holiday to do anything but raid.
Okay.
Well, damn. So it seems to be a lot of raiding.
There you have it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to be more specific, the new Ultimate Raid's coming out 2 weeks after 7.1. But beyond that, there's also going to be a new high-end difficulty, like a 24-man raid, which means that people are going to have that to work on, too. So it's going to be a lot of raiding this Thanksgiving through Christmas, and for most people, doing the Ultimate Raid into the new year.
Well, I think the last time they did that, the 24-man Savage, was it in the Boja, was it?
Was that... Yeah. There was DRS Savage.
Yeah, I didn't try that, but people run that for like hours trying to clear that. I don't see the point of it, but I guess we got more content, so looking forward to it, I guess.
People already rearranging their Thanksgiving plans. They're like, I can't meet up with the family this year. I'm busy, you know. Yeah.
Chow, did you ever end up doing Dawn Trail's first raid tier, or did you just not?
No, I couldn't finish the story. I just couldn't stand the story being so slow-paced. And I just haven't got time.
Chow, I need you to stop right there.
What?
You are a Trails fan. You're complaining about a story being too slow-paced?
Yeah, it is. Okay? Look, Final Fantasy gets me going a lot quicker than Trails, okay? But this time, I feel like, oh, man.
The podcast title, Final Fantasy gets me going.
You do get the like the irony though, right?
I do. But it's like first I got sidetracked doing was it Daybreak Guides, and then now that I'm doing that, I have a different project in the line. So there's like no time that I could ever make for Dawn Trail, and now I'm so far behind. It's like fuck it.
I still think it's interesting. This is kind of inside baseball, so like, should I say it publicly? Yeah, sure. Why not? I was like outright told that originally Daybreak was going to be Trails Before Dawn, but then Dawn Trail got revealed with the same release window. And so Nisa actually had to go back and change the name.
I feel like
it's a better title.
I forget if that was on a podcast or just another chat, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
Dawn Trail
versus
Trails Before Dawn.
Yeah, which makes sense. Like, with just SEO alone, it was the right choice. But it's very funny that, like, I was just outright told that. It's like, okay, that makes sense. It was the right choice, but also, man, that's sad.
Nah, they should have done the Dawn still. Fuck it.
What was that other one? The data mine name? Before Dark or something? I don't know what the hell it was.
That was never it, but...
I know, but yeah. There was a data mine name. That was a placeholder name.
Yeah. Daybreak is still a good name, so it worked out, but it's like, it's very funny that it's like, yeah, that makes sense that they had to change it to that.
I really wonder what the localized name for Kai will be.
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Well, what's your take? We were having this discussion last week. What's your take, James, since you weren't part of the discussion?
I will wait until I have beat the game.
Yeah. Good.
Response.
Yeah. Also, like, I mean, like, with Kuro, like, once you beat Kuro, it was immediately obvious what the name or like what sort of framing they should go for the name was, which is why everyone that had played it, like had actually played it, would be like, yeah, it has to be like Trails Before Dawn or something. Which is why Trails Through Daybreak still works, because it's like it's the same thematic idea. It fits. Like Kai, I'm gonna have to see exactly how I feel, like probably once I reach the end.
Yep, just like Hajimari no Kiseki, the start of the trail series.
Let's go.
Yep.
The last update that I have here is we covered this game kind of on a surprise this summer, Capcom's Kintsugami Path of the Goddess. It got an update that did some, quality of life updates in terms of, I've never played the game, so I might need to borrow some of James's experience here. Something a little bit about how sorceries work. We can you shorten the time required to skip cutscenes, minor bug fixes, and then kind of the highlight of the update is that they've added Okami music to the game as through the musician feature. I'm not sure if that's like a sound test or a jukebox or something like that. But of course, just leveraging kind of the thematic similarity between Kintsugami and Okami there, and just a little bit of self-referential, fan service in that way.
Kintsugami is a very neat game. More people should play it.
I played some of it. I haven't played all of it yet, but I need to find time to get back to it.
It's definitely not what I was expecting. It's kind of like action based type tower defense.
I really like it. I will say, like, and I mentioned in my review, those boss fights are generally pretty bad.
And I guess alongside the update, I guess the soundtrack for Kintsugami also just released on streaming services, so it's streaming on Spotify and Apple Music.
That's a pretty cool OST. Kaino Kiseki has a pretty cool OST. There's some not great songs, but in general, pretty.
The singer songs are the bad ones. Easy.
you're really a Falcon fan, aren't you?
Yeah. Look, that mid boss music it's clown music again. Okay,
I will say, like, as I mentioned on my Twitter account, I had not actually finished Kuro 2 yet, so I've been cleaning up my plate first before I properly get to Kai. It is really funny how little boss music there is in Kuro 2. Like, there's like a few fights I've been up against where it's like, it feels like there should have been something here, but you're just doing the same boss music. Okay. Yeah.
I'll never forget how people were like when Kuro 2 came out. They were like, "This is the best Trails ever."
And then they got to.
I never said that.
I definitely saw a couple of them, like, man, all right, I guess.
Gosh, help me here. What is the song name for the second trailer music for Kai no Kiseki? I'm trying to find it, but I don't know what the hell the song's called.
Just go to the final boss theme upload on Falcom Music Channel. They always do this.
Wait, it's a final boss theme? What?
They always do this.
I think it is a final boss theme.
Like, I'm not joking. They always do this. Like, at least one of the Falcom trailers for like both Easter trails. It's always the final boss or final dungeon.
The first web commercial for Kai is it a boss theme? It's like Emilia's theme.
Space or something.
Yeah, and then I think like one of the earlier trailers for Kai though after that is like final boss music.
Damn. Yeah. I was like, I didn't want to click on the final boss music, but you're telling me that's final boss music. Oh shit.
Because there's like three or four themes for the final boss, so take your pick.
Well, to wrap up this podcast, we'll kind of go through a few date updates before signing out. Came out a few days ago at the time of recording, but the Front Mission First remake, which released late in 2022, got the release of its previously announced Mercenaries DLC. It's a new original single-player scenario. That released on October 3rd and introduces 15 new playable characters and a few new gameplay options in multiplayer. AI Limit. This is a game that we covered way back when it was announced at part of one of the China Hero projects, I believe, in like 2019 or 2020. China Joy 2019. It kind of resurfaced back in early 2024 with a slightly updated art style. It will be getting a limited demo on October 14th, so that'll be kind of pretty interesting now that it's had time to go through development pains and struggles, a little bit of a facelift in terms of the art style being updated. It'll be a playable demo available on PC between October 14th and October 21st.
Yeah, I think that's like when the next Steam Next Fest starts, so... Gotcha. So that, like, it's just another, like, Christmas for people who want to try out demos of upcoming games.
This one's pretty interesting. The Switch version of Astro Libre is getting a standalone version of the DLC called Astro Libre Gaiden, the Cave of the Phantom Mist. This is, I have not played Astro Libre. I know, I think Josh and Chow both have. This is the DLC that features the Baker's daughter.
It's a very good DLC. I'll tell you, it's worth every penny. But you, in the PC version, you do need to buy the base game to play it. So
this is interesting because I actually had a conversation with John Cartwright from Good Vibes Gaming just the other day about so if you were to be asked how many new Xenoblade games released on Switch, would you say 2 or 4?
In terms of
because they're counting the DLC expansions.
Yeah, because I would say 4 because Torna had the separate physical release that was standalone, and even though Future Redeemed didn't, it's the exact same scope as Torna, and it's like they could have done a separate physical release, they just didn't. It's like, so seeing this, it just makes me think, like, what do you guys think?
I think that's a very good comparison, I would say. Like, yeah, they're pretty much full games almost by its own.
Yeah, I would say 4 then, if you're going by that standard. I would say sure, because like the DLC expansions are pretty beefy and like have their own. You start from the beginning again, have their own progression.
If you do everything,
systems.
Like Torna and Future Redeemed are both about like 30 hours. So
yeah.
This DLC when I beat it took me about 30 hours to get everything in there. It's like that's a pretty beefy. I mean, and from what they're charging is like. I think it was like $15 when it came out. I don't know. It was like, oh, this is totally worth every penny.
Oh, yeah,
for me,
Astro Libre Gaiden, because I don't know if Brian was able to finish his stop, but this is the Astro Libre Gaiden on Switch is available as a standalone thing. You don't need the base game to play it, unlike the PC version where you needed the base game to.
Yeah, I think the only thing I didn't say, or I forget if I said it, is that it's releasing on Switch on the 17th of October.
Yeah,
and we got a trailer.
Obviously, when you boot the game, it'll spoil some of the story moments in the main story. It's like a warning. It's like you must get past chapter 5, whereas it spoils something. It's like, oh, okay.
Did they announce the price on Switch yet, or not yet?
I don't think so. But I haven't gone to like the eShop to see if it's listed. But it's
right.
I don't think so.
Okay. Okay, but yeah, but I mean, for anyone who's like Astro Libre, I mean, this is like I guess I'll say, be aware of your expectations for Astro Libre Gaiden, because it's a very different progression system from the base game. There's more of like a roguelite sort of progression system. Obviously, a new protagonist, the Baker's daughter, not the main hero from the first game, but also the way you level up in this game is like. If you die during the progression, you start back at level 1. Anytime you get out of the dungeon, the main dungeon in this one, you start back at level 1, but you do have persistent progression mechanics in this game. So it's not like as straightforward as the main game, you know. But there's an interesting like job system, class system in this game that the main game doesn't have.
It has a lot of gameplay changes. Yeah. Even the magic system's completely different, right? Like she has her own magic, while the main character in the original game transformed to like demons and monsters to like summon like magic bolts or something like that, right?
Right.
It's
still a really, really cool DLC. Like definitely a very enjoyable one. And you still get the satisfying, like crunchy action. That the base game has.
Like when I beat this one, I feel my main character in this game is more stronger than the main character from Astro.
Yeah, Baker's daughter gets fucking busted by the end of this game. So yeah,
and I think even like there's a person even addressed that near the end. It's like I think that person might be stronger than that main character. So yeah,
it's a lot of fun. So no, that's good to see that this is coming out on Switch before the end of the year.
Yeah, and the DLC on Steam is $10. So, but obviously, yeah, nothing announced for the Switch version. We'll see.
Yeah, but you also need the base game to play it. So
that's the one kind of administrative difference. Is that one, you have to purchase the base game, which is $25. I don't know what the base game costs on Switch, but you don't need it for the DLC. So who knows? It was supposed to release on October 4th within the Cosmos. We talked about this game very briefly a few months ago. This is what was the solo developed first-person RPG that had a lot of similar aesthetic to Outer Worlds. The developer, Dev, has just kind of delayed the game for later in the month just because it needs a little bit more time. So it was originally supposed to release a few days ago, but hopefully still out before the end of the month.
Yeah, they seem to like apart from polish, like they I don't know, like, it's kind of a weird delay because they also want to improve on so many other things aside from that, like character face models and voice acting. So they contracted additional VAs to, you know, give more range to the voice actors. So it's like, it's one of those weird delays. Like, can you do this within, like, the delay time frame that you're saying? Like, can you still, like, release this by later this month if you're planning to have bigger overhauls than just additional polish and fixing? So it's going to be interesting to see, and hopefully, you know, obviously the best of them, because, you know, solo dev is extremely hard and also, you know, like, very, very, very taxing on your health, I imagine, as well. So,
right. It's, you know, it's been in development for over, for nearly a decade. And based on obviously the trailers and screenshots we've seen for a single project, it looks really impressive. But yeah, like, if that's a lot of scope for saying I just need a few weeks, a little more time. Like, I don't know the financials behind the project, but one of those things where if they need more time than a few weeks, I think it'd be perfectly understandable.
Yeah.
Here's something that is a bit of a surprise. Sea of Stars is getting like a major patch that they've given the update a new title called Sea of Stars Dawn of Equinox. It's an update that puts in a lot of requested features coming out on November 12th. They added a co-op mode. They've done some new gameplay around the combat. It's kind of like an overhaul of a lot of things, a speed runner mode. And this is different from the DLC that's coming out next year, which is called Clockwork something. Sorry, Thrones of the Watchmaker. So that's still coming out next spring, but they're doing kind of like a version 2.0 of the base game on November 12th with this Dawn of Equinox update. So a little bit of a surprise. I guess it'll be good for people who haven't played the game. I don't know if there's a lot here if someone who has already played the game to revisit it, but it's cool that they're able to take some feedback from the release and apply a big major patch to the game. And then the last news here, as we this is a little bit, I think, also of a surprise, but maybe Chow or Josh have their finger on the pulse a little bit higher than I do on this one. But Romancing Saga Re-Universe, the breadbasket, the breadwinner of the Saga series, its global version will be shutting down on December 1st.
I'm not surprised by that news, but the reason why this game has been going on for so long is because the Japanese side of things, that game is still making a shit ton of money. So it's like the Japanese side that's keeping the global servers on life support.
It's, you know? It wasn't even just that, though, because like had people at Square Enix just outright tell me that they saw it as a form of cross promotion for their Saga releases. Like,
right.
So it makes me wonder if they're hoping that Romancing Saga 2 like elevates the brand enough in the West that they don't need that.
I'm kind of thinking too, like because the this shutting down the global version, like there has been no news as far as I know that the Japanese client is shutting down.
Well, the Japanese client is not shutting down at all. It's still running strong.
Yeah. But also, I feel like it's worth mentioning that usually when these like global versions like shut down, it's within like a year or two. This has been going on for like what, 4 years now at this point, almost four.
Yeah, it's been running for quite a bit of time.
So it's not like it didn't have a decent run, at least. So
yeah,
it lasts longer than Dragalia Lost, guys.
The chat will never let go of Dragalia Lost.
You're going to murder me on chat tonight.
I mean, I've made my peace with that and other service end of service announcements. But I'm kind of in the same wavelength with James, like, because Re-Universe felt like that kind of unifying base of like foundational support of like, hey, you're able to like keep on doing these Saga remasters, remakes, and new projects because Re-Universe does so well that you do have like a foot at the table saying like, hey, our mobile game is doing well, please let us pursue these because our IP is so strong because of Re-Universe. As like, if you're trying to like make the case to Square Enix management, right? So without Re-Universe's in the global stage, I wonder what their plans are with the, how it's doing in Japan, because I don't know how it's actually doing in Japan, and I don't know if it's dwindling or not. Because you had like the recent Brave Exvius also shutting down as well, not just in global but in Japan as well, I believe.
Yeah, but that lasted 10 years, though.
I know, but like it's just more and more of these long-standing Square Enix mobile games continually shutting down. It makes me wonder how much longer they're going to keep the Japanese version of the game running. I don't know, because because he had that big Square Enix restructure announcement in the West, or not in the West, in general earlier this year, right? Because their HD games division is like not bringing in any profit. It hasn't been doing so for several years now. So I wonder if there's like also just a consequence of that whole restructure as well. So I really hope that this doesn't, you know, I'm hoping that with the universe shutting down globally, hopefully this doesn't have any ripple effects of like Saga's viability of having new and more new and new projects in the HD game space. But who knows, you know, because I imagine that the low performance of like the Saga HD games doesn't help its case in the long run, right? Like, I can't imagine that Emerald Beyond had stellar sales in Square Enix's eyes.
Yeah, though to be fair about like Emerald Beyond, I don't expect they had big expectations because they didn't even give it a physical release, whereas they're doing the physical release for Romancing Saga 2 and Fantasian for that matter. They probably have higher expectations for Fantasian than they did for
Emerald Beyond. I really wondered like what's their obviously we don't know their expectations of these projects, and I don't know how much of a success or failure they were in that respect, but it just kind of all feeds into that narrative on the financials that their HD games division has not made a profit for several years, you know, collectively speaking, right?
Yeah.
So if that's a factor in it, they're definitely thinking of like, hey, what can we do to like obviously boost that number up and make it profitable again? And if Saga isn't helping with that, then what does that say for the whole series? I imagine the Romancing Saga 2 remake is like, they're really betting a lot of their hopes and dreams of like their future prospects on the performance of that game.
So as of right now, it has only 4,538 followers for the game on Steam, and it's number 351 in terms of wishlist. So it's not looking like it's gonna blow up or anything like that.
Hopefully, I mean, this is definitely one of those things, like, hopefully word of mouth and strong, like, maybe critics reviews and, like, hopefully just user reviews.
Let's
and
see.
Word of mouth.
So, Curtain Seal is coming out the same day, I believe, October 24th, right?
Mm-hmm.
That one, well, it's doing better than Curtain Seal, at least.
Is it doing better than East 10? I think that's the exact same release date
as
East 10.
Okay, East 10, Nordics.
That's a weird one because that are they using like the are
East
they
low, Nordics, are they... East 10 Nordics has less wish list. So it seems like actually on Steam, Romancing Saga 2 is doing better compared to its peers.
Are they patching in the localization for East 10 or are they
no,
actually just releasing
no, no.
that normally?
They're releasing that normally. They
okay.
didn't. They
learned it the hard way.
I forgot if that was one of those or not. So
yeah, they learned it the hard way and like. Again, like Nice outright like told me, it's like we're never doing that again.
Yeah,
never doing that again.
Yeah. So, best of luck. You know, I really hope that the Saga 2 remake makes the case that like you know it's worth pursuing these kinds of projects more and more. I have a, like you know I really like Scarlet Grace and Emerald Beyond a lot, but it doesn't help drive in new players. In that case, too, you know.
It's the same reason why, but when I've had people that have told me, why are they doing a full Trails in the Sky remake? Why aren't they just porting it? It's like, you and I, we would buy a remaster or a port. Joe Average RPG Gamer will not.
Yeah, like
Joe Average RPG Gamer wants their game to look like it came out this decade.
Yeah,
yeah. We have this conversation before. I tried to get a friend to play, what's it, Daybreak? And he's like, yeah, he said, sure, no problem. It's like, but you want to like to get the best experience, you had to play all these other games. Like, no thanks.
I don't
want to
start from there. Right? Yeah, yeah. It's unreasonable to ask someone, hey, I want to play this game. Okay, but if you want to get the best experience, go play 1,000 hours before it. And it's like, no, they're not going to do that.
And that's an exaggeration at this point. Like, I even checked recently, and not counting Kai and not counting Nayuta, which isn't related at this point, 100% confirmed, not related. Just for like not even 100% plays, it's just like main plus extra on how long to beat. it's like almost 900 hours to get through Daybreak 2.
Yeah.
Like at this point, the entire series, if you're going for 100%, which, by the way, if people listening to this podcast that aren't Trails fans, there's multiple things in these games where they kind of expect you to have done 100% because of callbacks to specific side quests in previous games.
Yeah, and it's unreasonable. Like, no sane person is going to be like, oh, I can't wait to do that, you know? It's like, no one's going to do that.
And you see,
we say, as we have three people in this podcast that own a copy of Kaino Kiseki and played through Daybreak 2.
Yeah, I admit I am not a normal person. Like, I replayed Sky FC just fine, original. I was like, hey, this is still an enjoyable game, but a lot of people are like, it's so unplayable. How can people stand?
Sky FC is still one of my favorites in the series.
A lot of modern players are like, how can you play that game? Look at it, it looks like dog shit, and it's just so slow, and it's just like blah, blah, blah. And like, they'll make up, you know, they'll have all these sorts of reasons of why they should not play it. And they'll just wait for the remake, and that's fine.
Yeah, I'm excited for the remake. It looks great. So
yeah, it's just, you know, it's a whole story history. But I cannot fault anyone for saying, hey, I just want to try out Daybreak as a one and done game. Like, we did it. Like, I did it with a friend, and he had an enjoyable time with Daybreak, and he's totally fine not playing another Trails game again. We didn't tell him, hey, you need to go play 900 hours of other Trails games. It's like, hey, you can just totally treat that game as a one and done RPG. He's like, yeah, it was a very good game. I had fun with it.
If he wants to play Daybreak 2, then there's a problem.
Then we're laughing at him. Then, so I mean, I think we've already made the case to him to probably not play Daybreak 2. Even just outside of, like, it relies on like other past Trails games. It's just like my personal opinion of it and other friends' opinions of it are not great. So I think he's kind of like gotten the point. Like, I'm totally okay with just like playing Daybreak as a one and done game.
Yeah.
But
like I said, in
I will be
any
very
forms.
Curious to see what the overall reception is for Daybreak 2 once it's in English, because I feel like it's going to be very telling. Like, I made a joke earlier in the podcast, but it's not a joke. A lot of people are going to be having a great time enjoying that game because it is genuinely good through the intermission. Then you get to Act 3 and it's like, this is the equivalent of RPG dead calories. Like, it's just
eating air.
I mean, I won't say anything else. I'm like, you know, I don't want to spoil the experience for people. I don't want people to come in with like that, like certain preconceptions or like, you know, and so forth. Like, I want them to have as fresh of an experience as possible without, like, you know, without anyone's opinions influencing it, right? Like, make your own decision for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, that kind of covers all the topics that we had this week. So still got nearly 2 hours out of it, as we tend to do. But yeah, next week, of course, starts the holiday season-ish marathon for New Orleans.
Yeah, well, upfront, like, you know, Metaphor ReFantazio is going to be out by the next podcast, and that's probably going to be the main topic.
We will a lot to discuss, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I'll wait for the Royal Edition, whenever that is.
Well, then you're going to be waiting forever, because I don't think they're doing that anymore.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to do that.
Well, with that said, we'll go ahead and start wrapping up. We do have a ton of articles up on the site, rpgsite.net, from James's time at TGS. It's something like 7 previews, 2 interviews, and a few things that you put up as news features. It's a lot. So go ahead and check out rpgsite.net for all the updates coming out of TGS. Of course, tune back in next week, and we'll go into a very, very deep dive with Metaphor ReFantazio. Follow us on all the social media channels. Just search for RPG space site, SITE, and you should be able to find us. Join our Discord, discord.gg/RPGsite, and you'll be able to join the conversation there, or hit the link at the top of our homepage. And we'll be back next week with another episode of the TetraCast. So until you hear from us next time, stay safe, take care. We'll talk to y'all later.
That's so sick. They had they performed the Metaphor battle theme live with the crazy Buddhist chanting. It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.